As Robin mentioned, I'm going to speak about adolescent immunization delivery, specifically in school-based health centers, the results of a national survey. I have no disclosures to make. So by way of background, the audience is familiar with much of this background. There's been a number of new vaccines targeted at adolescents, and then a number of vaccines that have been targeted for many years to adolescents. But there are many barriers to vaccination for adolescents, which should come as no surprise. So in recognition of the importance of new vaccines and the barriers that adolescents face, there really have been a much more rigorous look at strategies to strengthen adolescent immunization delivery system, including looking at reducing barriers to vaccination within the traditional medical home. But there's also been interest in exploring immunization outside of traditional settings. So in that context, there's been great interest in looking at vaccination within schools. Schools are really the workplace of children, and obviously there are a number of potential advantages to vaccination in schools, but there are a number of barriers as well. Right now, less than 15% of U.S. schools currently provide any vaccines. Specifically with respect to school-based health centers, they may have the resources and the expertise to implement adolescent vaccination programs. So a little bit about school-based health centers. They're typically staffed by physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and they really are intended to provide comprehensive health care to students. In essence, they're really designed in general to serve as the primary medical home for adolescents. There are about 2,000 school-based health centers nationally, with increasing numbers every year, but little is known about immunization delivery in school-based health centers, which is why we undertook the following study. The objectives of the study I'm going to present today were to determine current immunization practices of school-based health centers nationally. More specifically, to look at vaccines offered, look at methods for improving immunization rates, mechanisms for vaccine financing, and then to examine perceived barriers for adolescent vaccination. Those were the primary objectives. Our secondary objective was to examine reported experiences with school-based health centers offering HPV vaccination, given that HPV vaccination would be potentially unique to be offered in the school setting, for obvious reasons, because of a three-dose schedule and because it's a sexually transmitted infection. So the methods for the study, surveys were conducted November 2007 through March of 2008. 1,000 school-based health centers were randomly selected from a national listing of school-based health centers. school-based health centers were excluded if they didn't provide any medical services or didn't see any adolescent patients, and surveys were conducted by internet and mail. So moving on to results, with respect to survey response, 19% were ineligible for the survey, and there was a 64% survey response rate among eligible school-based health centers. And there were some differences in survey response rates by region and by degree of urbanicity. So taking a look at the responding school-based health centers, a couple things I want to point out here. These were actually pretty big schools. See if I can get the pointer on there. 45% saw at least 500 students during the school year. They served multiple grades, 6 through 8 and 9 through 12. Something else to point out is that at least two-thirds of the school-based health centers reported that 60% or more of their students were eligible for a free and reduced lunch program, and many were from racial and ethnic minority groups. Many of the students in the schools where the school-based health centers were located. So overall, 84% were already providing vaccines. Just kind of keep this figure in mind, because some of the slides I'm going to present pertain just to those that are already vaccinating. So 84% were already vaccinating adolescents within the school-based health centers, 16% were not. So what vaccines were offered? As you can see, of the vaccines that were recommended at 11 to 12 years of age, really most were vaccinating with Tdap, but many, 80% were vaccinating with HPV, 79% with meningococcal vaccine. With respect to what's traditionally called sort of the catch-up vaccines for adolescents, most were offering hepatitis B vaccine, but MMR, IPV, varicella were offered as well. Again, this is the important context here is this is among those school-based health centers that offer any vaccines. And then with respect to high-risk group, vaccines indicated for particular high-risk groups, influenza vaccine was offered at 84% of the school-based health centers. So, as I mentioned, we wanted to examine methods used to improve immunization rates, and in fact, these school-based health centers had a number of methods in place to improve immunization rates of their students. 69% used an immunization information system or a registry, and for many, that registry was accessible by PCPs in the community. They notified PCPs of vaccines given at the school-based health center and assessed up-to-date rates. And many also engaged in some form of reminder recall. 60% contacted adolescents directly at school. They also telephoned students' homes or sent mail home. Few used email to contact adolescents who were needing vaccines. Overall, 83% reported using at least one of these methods of reminder recall to improve immunization rates. Because of the context, because these students will often be seen without their parents in the school-based health centers, in most cases they're seen without their parents, this complicates issues of consent, it complicates issues related to the vaccine information statements, so we inquired about this as well. They used multiple methods for obtaining parental consent, including sending the consent home of the student, but also a little less than half obtained consent for vaccination at school registration. The VIS forms were also used in multiple ways. Sometimes they sent it home with the students before vaccination. 43% sent them home with students after vaccination. It's important to note, however, that 19% of these vaccinating school-based health centers reported providing VIS forms after vaccination, but not before, and that's actually not compliant with national immunization recommendations. Vaccine financing, as you'll see in future slides, was a significant barrier in school-based health centers, so we inquired as well about that. Most school-based health centers were participating in the VFC program, and they vaccinated students with a variety of insurances. They vaccinated, 96% reported vaccinating students with Medicaid, 91% with SCHIP, 98% uninsured, and 83% reported vaccinating an occasional student with private health insurance. However, it's important to recognize that only 39% reported billing private health insurance for vaccines given. So basically from that, you can assume that they weren't vaccinating a lot of privately insured students, but perhaps the occasional student, because most weren't billing. So among the school-based health centers that are currently vaccinating, we asked them to articulate their most significant barriers to adolescent vaccination. And these were these very practical barriers that they encountered every day. Difficulty obtaining outside immunization records was the barrier that was reported most frequently. As you can see, definitely barriers in that sort of orange color and somewhat of a barrier in the green. Obtaining parents' consent was also a barrier. Not being able to vaccinate non-VFC students was also a barrier. But as you can notice, less than 20% of school-based health centers mentioned that these were a significant barrier. So they were really, I think, overcoming these barriers by and large. We also asked the school-based health centers that were not vaccinating what their barriers to vaccination were. Again, these are, again, the 14% that weren't vaccinating at all. And they had a somewhat different list of barriers. Difficulty billing private insurance was one of their predominant barriers, not being able to vaccinate non-VFC students, and then some of the other barriers with respect to consent were mentioned less often. So again, among those non-vaccinating school-based health centers that appeared to be related to vaccine financing. So we did a series of additional analyses, univariate and multivariate, looking at what were the factors associated with whether these school-based health centers did or did not provide vaccines. Interestingly, school-based health centers with a higher proportion of students eligible for free and reduced lunch were more likely to provide vaccines. That factor was significant only in univariate analyses. And then in multivariate analyses, those factors that were associated with increased odds of providing vaccines to adolescents included having a lower proportion of students with an outside PCP, serving grades 6 to 8 as opposed to serving grades 9 to 12, and then region of the country. And then a number of factors were not associated with whether vaccines were provided or not. As I mentioned, a secondary objective of this study was to look at experience providing HPV vaccine in school-based health centers. So we inquired about the attitude of school administration to offering HPV vaccine, and only 3% said that the administration had moderate or definite resistance to this idea. 3% mild resistance and 66% no resistance, and then 27% actually hadn't discussed that specific issue with school administration at all. Scopus Health Centers that provided gynecologic exams and pap smears on-site were much more likely to offer HPV vaccine than those that did not. And they were also asked about barriers to providing HPV vaccine, and the most prominent barrier was not being able to vaccinate students who didn't qualify for the VFC program. This national survey did have some important limitations to keep in mind. Not all school-based health centers in the nation may be listed in this national listing, although we think most are. While the survey response rate was comparable to other national surveys, response rates did vary by region and by degree of urbanicity. And it's important to keep in mind that the survey results I presented today, they represent reported practice, and actual practice wasn't observed and could vary from what they reported on a survey. However, in the context of these limitations, we do have a number of findings. With respect to vaccination practices, overall, 84% of school-based health centers are already vaccinating adolescents, and most offered Tdap, meningococcal conjugate vaccine, and HPV vaccine. These school-based health centers already engage in a number of methods to improve immunization delivery. Many use immunization information systems. Most conduct some form of reminder recall. Most also assess up-to-date rates. And the frequency with which school-based health centers conducted these activities is much higher than has been reported in the literature, for example, for pediatric private practices. Some additional findings. With respect to vaccine financing, as I mentioned, more than 90% participate in VFC. They vaccinate publicly insured students, they vaccinate uninsured students, but most do not bill private insurance for vaccines. And difficulty billing private insurance was frequently cited as a barrier, particularly among those school-based health centers that don't vaccinate at all. With respect to HPV vaccination specifically, there was apparently little resistance from school administration to offering HPV vaccine in the school-based health centers. And the prominent barrier to offering HPV vaccine was actually the inability to vaccinate students who didn't qualify for the VSC program. These findings have a number of implications. School-based health centers appear to be already fully engaged in vaccine delivery to adolescents, as evidenced by a number of factors. Number one, they're early adopters of new vaccine recommendations. They're also more likely to use a number of strategies to improve immunization coverage among their students, including reminder recall. They're more likely to use that than private practices, for example. If you can think back to the slide where I described the characteristics of the school-based health centers, it's important to think about these as being concentrated in pockets of need. These school-based health centers are located in big schools with high percentages of students who are in the free and reduced lunch program. These students are less likely to have a PCP elsewhere, and so arguably they're at higher risk for missing needed immunizations. But it's important to think about those findings in the broader context of school-based health centers in the nation. There's almost 100,000 public elementary and secondary schools in the U.S., but there's only about 2,000 school-based health centers in the U.S. And there are quite a few barriers, ones that I won't have time to go into here, but there's quite a few barriers, financial and other, to the expansion of school-based health centers. And so because of those limited numbers, I think we need to think about, even in the context of the success of school-based health centers, that they should be viewed in many ways as a complementary site. And the traditional medical home is still going to be the primary site for vaccination for most, the reason being that most schools don't have a school-based health center. But one way to think about it is really to think about this as a safety net for adolescents without reliable access to vaccines elsewhere. And then on a final note, I want to talk about whether this teaches us anything about vaccination in schools without school-based health centers. An important caveat here is to consider that school-based health centers have the infrastructure, the resources, and the providers that really aren't available in schools without school-based health centers. So it's very much comparing apples to oranges. However, from this survey, we identified a number of challenges that really could relate to broader school-based vaccination programs. Parental communication appears to be difficult. For example, the fact that almost 20% of school-based health centers aren't able to get VIS forms to the parents before vaccination is a concern, and this may be a problem with school-based vaccination as well, depending on how that's designed. And as noted, billing private insurance represents a substantial barrier to immunization within school-based health centers. That also is likely to be a factor in vaccination in schools. So I work with a big and very talented group of folks, both at the University of Colorado, at Denver Health and Hospitals, where they have a big school-based health center program. We also worked with Linda Ushik at the National Assembly for School-Based Health Center, and then Robin with the Centers for Disease Control. Thanks very much.